is putting surveillance systems and identification systems at door entrances and exits so we can very quickly tell if there's any funny thing going on at a building entrance or exit. And that way we would quickly know that there's something up here that isn't normal, there's something that has to be immediately responded to, and depending on exactly where it is, it's probably, we're talking probably a minute or two response. If some of these systems prove successful, we most likely will see them as best practices put through many of these new facilities across the state. I do think that's one of the best prevention keys is to, you know, when somebody goes astray. But because even if you get people off campus, as the other chancellors were saying, when they're released, if you banish them and suspend them or expel them, there's still no way in these very open places you know if they're back or not, really. But there are ways you can tell if somebody's Mickey Mousing around with a building exit or entrance, and you can quickly tell there's something abnormal about that, and you can quickly respond to it. So that's just one example of what we're, and that's already in place at a few of our colleges, but we're piloting that. Mindful that, you know, surveillance cameras in every piece of the college that make people nervous, and maybe that's not necessary, but we do need a certain amount of surveillance so we know what's going on, particularly with building entrances and exits. May I make a comment to the Senator Padilla's previous question about,
sure,
about the evacuation centers? We're really different than, as you know, the UC and the CSU in several ways. One is, as I mentioned when you were out of the room, we're almost in every one of 58 counties. We also have most of the post academies, in fact, really, I think all of the post academies and almost all the fire academies in the state of California. So right on our campuses, we have a lot of cadets, fire and police, and fire and police professionals, because they're teaching all these students in these academies. So right off the bat, we actually have access to a fairly large response group. And we also have, by far, the most nursing programs. I mean, out of our 109 colleges, we have, I believe, 85 with nursing programs, and they all have also integrated response plans for evacuation. And I was actually one that suggested in the governor's task force, being headed by Secretary Belcher, that we take a very serious look at making more uniform planning and preparedness for evacuation to our community colleges, particularly not so much really in urban areas. That's important, but there's other choices. But some places, and there's no other choice. The community college is the only place. If you go, for instance, to Wairika or to Susanville, the community college is the only place in the whole region that has large gymnasium facilities, that has some medical facilities, that has this possibility of housing those communities. And the one thing we do lack, and I appreciate that there is legislation coming up on this, we really need to carefully think through what we need to stockpile at those places and maintain, because frankly, we're not equipped to suddenly inherit, you know, 20,000 people that really weren't expected. I mean, there's not going to be enough food, water, blankets, or anything else. And of course, you know, we can't keep everything on hand, but it seems to me, and I brought this up in that task force, there should be an established baseline of supplies that we have warehoused at those sites so that, you know, when something happens, and it really is a question of when, particularly with natural disasters, that at least we know what to do and we have the capability to give very minimal baseline service for the period of time we can reasonably expect to have to do that. So, you know, we do have advantages. Our physical deployment of our locations, our as I told you, the police and fire academies, the large nursing programs, we already have in place a lot of the pieces you need to handle a lot of people in stress over a period of time. So that, for us, is a little bit of a different picture than it would be for, you know, a university in the middle of a city. Really, it's a different picture.
If I could add just a bit to that, you were talking earlier and the question was about whether or not a college was connected in with the city in which they operate or at the county level. And what we are doing in the North Coast College University Mutual Aid Group, we are working with the community colleges to make sure that they, especially those that cross multi-city jurisdictional lines, are recognized as a city, equal to a city. For instance, in Sonoma County, we have a seat on the Emergency Council operations meetings, and that way, resources that we have, resources we need, we're not going to try to pick them from a city, or a city isn't going to try to pick them from us. It's everything goes through one operational area. And that's where the resources are managed out so that the cities and the community college and all entities will share equally.
Right. And Senator, when you were out of the room, I mentioned that, as you remember in Los Angeles, the way we handled that, tremendous multitude. We had 58 cities in our district. There was no way that we could rig up all the police frequencies and get all the plans together. So as you will recall, in 2000, we actually contracted with the LA County Sheriff to provide our policing and made that a seamless system, which I wouldn't suggest every place in the state would do that. But in Los Angeles, that did mean everybody was at least playing off the same book. We have the same procedures, same drills, responses, all the sheriff's resources, and all the same frequencies and plans and behavior. So for that reason, in a very complex place like that, that really does take away a lot of those real problems with the jurisdictional overlaps and things that don't work and that don't connect together. Of course, there's always two sides to every story, but for that district, I was just checking the other day, they're still basically happy with the arrangement, and they certainly are up to speed on all these procedures and processes in Los Angeles.
And just to flip the coin on
we've got to conclude pretty quickly here. We have another group that's going to testify, and it's 10 minutes of 12, so unless we've got something unusual to add, let's just move on to the University of Southern California.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Scott and Senator Padilla. Thank you. First of all, thank you for inviting a representative of the independent sector to today's hearing. My name is Veronica Villalobos, and I'm Director of State Government Relations for the University of Southern California. USC is one of 75 members of the Association of Independent California Colleges and Universities. AICCU's institutions serve over 250,000 students in the state, and range from campus sizes to just a few hundred to 30,000, which is the University of Southern California. So due to this diversity in size and geographic location, it is difficult to characterize the segment's policies and procedures regarding campus safety, but there are three challenges that we wanted to highlight today. First is the difficulties in sharing information regarding a student's education and health records, as you have heard earlier, regarding HIPAA and FERPA. And second is the issue of campus security and the lack of authority provided in the state's penal code for private colleges to increase the rights and responsibilities of their security forces. And lastly is the challenge to increasing security in our campuses while protecting the individual freedoms of our students who are young adults, and also maintaining the campus as a community resource. Now I just would like to introduce our chief, Carrie Drayton of USC, who will further address these issues.
Good afternoon. It is afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity. And I had a lot of prepared remarks, but I'm not going to repeat anything that you've heard. Okay.
Thank you.
I'm appreciative of that. You've done a good job. Thank you for doing this. I would like to say, just to add some of the things that USC has done that you've not heard. We have a water filtration system on our campus to help deal with some of the community intrusion that's going to happen to allow us to be able to provide extra water. We have some stored food to deal with, at least the numbers that we know we're dealing with, and we're working with the county and the city. If they're going to bring persons to our campus, we're hoping that they're going to bring some food resources along with them. So you hadn't heard that before, and that's different. One of the things that you've been asking is, how do we deal with on a campus these students who are in crisis? And I'll start with a story that was recently written in the LA Times about one of our students who had, at a party, a 25 caliber weapon in his waistband, pulled it out, told a young woman that, "I'll shoot you in the head." That started a rippling effect of things. We had young men at the party who was also students. The person who pulled out the weapon was a student. They talked him into putting the weapon back in his waistband. When he did, they jumped on him and then called us to the scene. We in turn called LAPD. Now we have a student who, obviously, something is not right. There was lots of stuff to do, and in fact, in working with LAPD, we found another weapon, loads of ammunition, disturbing writings, methamphetamine, so forth and so on. That student was delivered a letter in jail saying, "You're immediately suspended from the university." We also worked with LAPD to make sure that student received some mental health counseling while still in jail to make sure that he's going to be okay. We also then made the call to the parents who were in New York to make sure that they were aware of the crisis that may be confronting their student. They were very appreciative of that call. So that's something that we do, and that's just one example, unfortunately, of several that I can go on and on about. I've been in campus law enforcement for 28 years. I started out in campus law enforcement, so I have a unique perspective from this situation, and that to share with you that one of the things that we do, again, you've not heard this, is that how we deal with it at USC and several of the campuses that I've been on, we pull together professionals, and I'll just go through this list of people, and it may not mean a whole lot to anybody, but we have the Assistant Associate Vice President of Student Affairs, the Director of Student Judicial and Community Standards, Director of Students with Disabilities, Director of Residential Education, a detective from my operation, and the Captain of Operations for the Department of Public Safety, a Director of International Student Services, Director of Student Counseling, Associate Dean of Student Services, and Dean of Academic Services. We sit down weekly in a meeting called Student Concerns. And it's at that point we look at students who either in their social life, in their party life, as you will, in their academic life, or their interactions with the police department. That's how they come to our attention. We discuss and then have a plan in place that's formulated if that person is being noticed in several of those areas. So we feel that safety net does, and I think the speaker earlier mentioned that, but maybe not in that detail, mentioned that that does have a lot of good positive results on the five campuses that I've been on, and USC makes the fifth. So I wanted to make mention of that because you had not heard that. Also, I will close with this. I don't know if you're aware of the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators. If you don't know, that's a group, a national group, actually an international group that represents colleges and universities around the world. On April 23rd, Steve Healy, who is the current president, made a had testimony before the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Affairs. During that testimony, he outlined a four-point risk management strategy for campus law enforcement. ICLEA will work with National Associations of Higher Education, external law enforcement partners, and individual campuses to develop these strategies that may help prevent future tragedies on campus. I believe that California should take a lead in working with these national groups to create this strategy so that we're not left behind. In particular, I'm speaking now from the private perspective, the private university's perspective, that we're not left in those discussions. And I want to close by just saying, without the help of LAPD and Chief Bratton, our campus would not be as safe as it is. Unfortunately, maybe all campuses, private campuses, don't have that same good working relationship, and we certainly need the help of the legislature to shore up, making sure that we can get access to information. Because as we found in 9/11, when the federal government recognized that they had different departments within the federal government hoarding information, we need access to that same information on the private campuses. So for an example, without our good working relationship with LAPD, the student that I talked about with the 25 caliber, we may not have known any of that other stuff. He would have got out of jail that night, and who knows what would have occurred. So thank you.
Thank you. Just one question. Are your security people armed?
I have 80 that are armed and 120 that are unarmed.
I see. So you have 200?
I have 226 now.
I see. Okay. And I know that varies from campus to campus depending upon the area that they're in. And as someone who lived in Southwest Los Angeles for 10 years, I understand that
yes.
The surrounding community, and I'm not trying to stigmatize it, but it's not always an area that is the safest area.
Exactly.
That way, in all of Los Angeles. So anyway, I'm just curious about your about how that worked. Well, I don't have any additional questions, and I've been just deeply impressed by all of the great information we've gotten this morning. I had questions, but I have to confess that probably I received a greater degree of assurance than I received questions to raise. And I am very impressed with all of the schools and colleges and universities who've done such a great job. Now, I did promise that we could have a period of public comment, and we want to do that. We've run a little bit over here as far as the people are concerned, but we still, if somebody has come and would like to testify in front of this group, we certainly want to give you that opportunity. Do we have public comment? All right, we don't have public comment. Yeah, and you know it's 2 minutes till 12, so we've done pretty well given the fact that we listen to schools, colleges, and universities. And so thank you, all of you, for what you did. I really deeply appreciate it. And once again, one of the things that hearings do often beget is legislation. And so it raised our awareness, and as I've already said this morning, if members of the education community feel that we here at the state level could empower you and assist you in any way, we want to do that. Thank you very much.